Hi there. Listening to some asinine perjury Trader Green bullshit. Trump drops out. Breaking Trump drops out of what? No way. 4 minutes ago.
So, folks, old Donnie just
Don't
did it again.
Us for...
Making a shocking,
Don't threaten us with a good time.
Surprising announcement about his political future in 2024. Demonstrating that he's not only a coward, but that he is quitting at a critical juncture. Something I don't think anybody saw, including people that work for him. And it's based on the fact, guys, that he knows he's in big trouble. He knows that the polling is going against him, especially when it comes to general polling. He knows that his fundraising is terrible. And he also knows that whether it's on politics, whether it's on his personal conduct, or whether it's on his civil and criminal legal troubles,
jail,
he has no actual defense. And so the man is making a game-changing decision to quit before 2024. Listen to this, and then we'll break it down.
And Fran called me last night, go, hey, I'm going to send you some polls of Trump. He's a supporter of Trump. And he's like, ah, look at this. And this is what he showed me, that Donald Trump's favorability among Republicans.
Yeah, member of his own party. We talked about a little bit of this yesterday.
An all-time high.
Well, right.
There you go.
Right? In Republicans.
Yeah, at an all-time high. Now, he thought, let's just say this. He thought that this would send people that watch this show and people who want Democrats to win into a spiral. And I said, dude, you don't understand. You think that Democrats are still scared of Donald Trump. No, they want him to win. You think you're owning the libs? You're only making libs as comfortable as if you were smoking a big bong in your front yard playing hacky sack wearing a Che Guevara t-shirt. Like, this is what they want. This is the natural order of things. Because look at this next poll, Willie,
okay,
from the same group.
Yep.
Do you want Trump to be president again? Look at the independent numbers. 29% yes, 68% no. I'm not exactly sure when it happened, Willie, but at some point, Donald Trump went from being the big bad wolf for liberals and making them like curl up in a fetal position under their desks. Like, they didn't even like have the energy to go out and play hacky sack on the front yard, front lawns, or in the street. At some point, went from there to now where they're happy when he does well in Republican polls, because they know it means they're going to win. They're not owning the libs. They're saying, here you go, libs. Here's the White House for 4 more years.
Yeah, whatever nerves progressives and Democrats may have about Joe Biden running for re-election are assuaged when they think about, oh, hopefully it will be Donald Trump on the other side. Obviously, they want Donald Trump to be president again, but they believe that Joe Biden not only beat him once, but can beat him again because of the very numbers you're showing right there. You cannot win a national election with 29% support among independents. Maybe that changes over the next year and a half. There's a lot of road ahead of us and a lot of things can change. But you just can't win a general election, a national general election with 29% support among independents. And by the way, that Republican number isn't where he used to be either. 27% of Republicans maybe looking around a little bit saying, I don't want this guy to be president. I may have taken a waiver on him once or twice, but I don't want to do it again. But I think you're right, Joe, to focus on that independent number. That's where presidential elections are won and lost.
Yeah, and that second poll was a Marist poll. Jonathan Lemire, though, this is a thing, I know there are many Democrats who are concerned about Joe Biden. They think he's too old. They don't think he can do this. You just go, though, and I keep saying it, because this
He's
election's
like
not going to be won,
buddy.
And I want to get our other panelists in to talk about this, because they'll agree. The election's not won across 50 states. It's literally won in the suburbs of Atlanta, which will never, and I never say never, will never go for Donald Trump again. The suburbs of Philadelphia, that will never, ever go for Donald Trump in 2024. The suburbs of Detroit, that will never go for Donald Trump. Wisconsin, never. Donald Trump, if nominated, he rebuilds that blue wall that we kept talking about during the Obama era. That blue wall in the Electoral College, the Republicans would never be able to break.
Why am I saying this so much
at 6:06 in the morning in April of 2007? Because we know the die is cast when it comes to Donald Trump in these areas. Same thing with Arizona. The guy can't win there. It was a lot of these races were close. They've broken against him, and he's become more radicalized. And you look at these numbers, the very numbers, Jonathan, that he should have been building up, he's been tearing down. The damage is complete now.
Yeah, he won in 2016, of course, losing the popular vote. But he won because he was able to switch enough voters in the blue wall states, the Pennsylvania, the Wisconsin, the Michigan, those independent, those swing voters, and some disaffected Democrats who, you know, perhaps were voting against Hillary Clinton, but decided, hey, let's give the new guy a chance here. Let's try for change. He did. Some of those voters that do, as you say, traditionally decide elections, some of them broke for Trump, at least enough of them broke for Trump in 16. That he won that day. Those voters broke hard against him in 2020 because of his handling of the pandemic, because of his mismanagement, frankly, and the controversial headlines that he spewed nearly every day while in office. And the theory of the case here, certainly from the White House, from Democrats I speak to, is they have a really, really hard time seeing those voters breaking back to Trump in 24. And polling right there bears that out, that they're simply not going to give Trump and likely other Republicans that chance, considering how their positions are only growing more extreme on things like abortion and guns and schools and the like. So that is, this is a race. If it's a Trump-Biden rematch, the White House feels really confident about it. It also negates the age issue, since Trump's only a couple years younger than Biden.
Renna, going back to the debates, can I ask you something? So the Democrats don't want, the top Democrats don't want a debate with Joe on the stage. I saw yesterday that Donald Trump on Truth Social said, I see that everybody is talking about the Republican debates, but nobody got my approval or the approval of the campaign, Trump campaign, before announcing them. When you're leading by seemingly insurmountable numbers and you have hostile networks angry with Trump and MAGA-hating anchors asking the questions, why subject yourself to being libeled and abused? So, did you talk to him about the debates? Is he in, or is this just what he does? He did this in 2016.
Working the refs.
I talk to President Trump all the time, and we've talked to all the potential candidates. We've let them know the schedule. We've announced the debates. The first debate's going to be with Fox in Milwaukee. But every campaign and every candidate's going to have to make a decision. Do I want to participate? He's going to have to make that decision. I think he'll do it. And President Trump never shies away from a debate, and he did very well in a debate. They did 2020.
He skipped hours. He skipped hours in 2016.
He did. He skipped one, but, you know, he was on the center of the debate stage in 2016, and he never left it. So we'll see what happens, but we are talking to the campaigns and the candidates. I talked to President Trump and Mike Pence and Nikki Haley. We're talking to all of them all the time, and we'll see what happens. It's going to be a roller coaster.
You can see the polling is bad for him, and that other clip really does demonstrate, guys, that he's not going to the debates. Trump is quitting on the debates. He's not quitting the campaign, but he's quitting the debates before 2024. And that's a big deal. And I think, in effect, this is a sense for him to soft-pedal quitting. Because if you're not going to go to any of the debates, that says a lot. I know they mentioned there, like, Fox's really awkward moment. It's like, yeah, he does skip out on debates. He skipped out on a debate in 2016. But the reality is, those debates made Donald Trump. Say what you will. Most of you watching hate Donald Trump just as much, if not more, than I do. The man dominated those Republican debates. And it was in those debates that he showed the rest of the field that he's just going to bully everybody else on stage. And none of them pushed back, or at least pushed back successfully. And the man ran to the nomination, and unfortunately, because of the broken Electoral College, to the presidency. And so for him to not go to the debates, the one thing that demonstrated his strength when very few people believed in him, is a sign that the man is giving up and quitting. right? He might still be running, but the Trump not at the debates. It's like Trump not at a rally. These are the moments this dude lives for. He is terrified. It's a mixture of things. He might be soft-pedaling quitting. His lawyers might be telling him, every time you get in front of a camera, you incriminate yourself. So be careful at these debates. Maybe don't do them. And also, he's afraid. He's afraid for the first time ever. If he does indeed run, quitting the debates, quitting this, you know, announcement to quit something before 2024 is maybe a way of self-preservation. In any case, this man, whatever, say what you will about Trump before. He was a monster, but he wasn't necessarily a coward. Now, he's a monstrous coward.
Donald Trump and his lawyer, Alina Habba, are sanctioned almost $1 million by a federal judge in Florida for filing a frivolous lawsuit back in March of 2022 against Hillary Clinton and about a dozen other individuals. We've been covering the sanctions motions and the dismissal by the federal judge in that matter. But this sanctions order is scathing. You will not want to miss our breakdown. Stay tuned. And as we break down the law, Popak, Trump is breaking down in real time. He is swirling.
he's just breaking down.
He is swirling the drain. He is dripping desperation. He is weak. Following the sanctions order by the federal judge in Florida, Donald Trump immediately dismissed another frivolous lawsuit that he filed and that we've been covering here on Legal AF. That's the frivolous lawsuit he filed against New York Attorney General Letitia James in Florida, which just so happened to also be assigned to the same federal judge, Judge Donald Middlebrooks, who just sanctioned him $1 million. The lesson is clear, folks. Trump is a coward. You stand up to him like Judge Middlebrooks did, and he backs down like the coward that he is. And meanwhile, a federal judge in New York unsealed more pages of the deposition transcripts from Donald Trump's deposition in the E. Jean Carroll civil rape and defamation lawsuit, which is set for trial this April. And in new stunning deposition transcript pages that were just released, Donald Trump reprehensibly says on some of the pages that he cannot have raped E. Jean Carroll because she is not his type. Disgusting. But then on additional deposition transcript pages, when he's shown a picture of E. Jean Carroll from 30 years ago, he thought that what he was looking at, who he was looking at, is his ex-wife Marla Maples. There was this Perry Mason moment, courtesy of E. Jean Carroll's lawyers, Roberta Kaplan. And we turn back to Florida in this episode of Legal AF, where a federal judge found that Ron DeSantis violated the constitutional rights of the Hillsborough County prosecutor when DeSantis suspended him for being too woke because the prosecutor signed a petition saying he didn't believe that women should be arrested for having abortions. And the federal judge, in making this scathing ruling against DeSantis, though, said that he was limited based on the United States Constitution about the remedies he could provide. In essence, he couldn't grant any remedy. So, Popak, knowing your expertise as a Florida lawyer, the question that everybody's asking is, what happens next for DeSantis and what happens next for this prosecutor? Well, what happens next for the United States Supreme Court? We'll focus on that in this episode of Legal AF as well, because the United States Supreme Court concluded its investigation into who leaked the Dobbs ruling. Of course, the Dobbs ruling despicably overturned Roe v. Wade, and the leak occurred on May 2nd of 2022 to Politico, and the Supreme Court concluded they could not find the leaker. The Supreme Court investigation, however, did not really focus on the justices themselves. They weren't forced to sign any sworn affidavits. Well, I think, Popak, I can give you a Lido hint who may have leaked it. We'll talk about that here on the Legal AF podcast. And Peter Navarro, the MAGA extremist Trump stooge, who is set to go to trial for a contempt of Congress charge for not showing up in response to the January 6th committee's duly issued subpoenas. He lost his motion to dismiss in humiliating fashion in federal court, and now he will head for trial for contempt of Congress, where I suspect that he's going to be summarily convicted very quickly, just like Steve Bannon. They don't say it's the most consequential legal news of the week for no reason, Popoc. We got a lot of consequential news. How are you doing? Great looking glasses, Michael Popoc. You know, I saved my glasses comment until the very end intentionally of the last podcast so I could just close out with it. But, you know, the reality is, if we're being objective here, I think mixed feelings about the glasses. I think overall it's grown on people. But if I'm just being blunt with you, I think in the last show, in the chat, I would say it was mixed, if I'm being fair.
Well, the good news is I've been reading all the other hot takes. I'm running 9-1 in favor of the glasses. So the people have come around to this concept. But that's not why people tune into Legal AF about my eyewear or your fleece jacket. And boy, do we have a great things to talk about today. Two judges who took on DeSantis in one with Judge Hinkle and Donald Trump with Judge Middlebrooks. What? I mean, he's the jurist of the week for me. He might be the jurist of 2023 for me, is Don Middlebrooks. And we're going to talk about that. But Hinkle did a great thing, too, because when we get into that DeSantis trial, where everything went against him, except at the very end on jurisdiction, a lot of judges would have started with jurisdiction, punted the case and said, I don't have any jurisdiction, and I'm not even going to bother with a bench trial. But Hinkle didn't want to do that. Hinkle wanted to get all those facts out, just as Middlebrooks wanted to get all the facts out in a 50 or 60 page opinion so that the world and history could see it. And that's another thing that judges do that we don't give them enough credit for, which is to take on tyrants and take on vexatious litigants and bad faith litigants like Donald Trump and spell it out page by page methodically. And their opinion, I guess, is if I got to read all the crap that they file in their briefs, they're going to have to sit and read my federal judge order about what I think about all the crap that they filed.
Just as people have come around to supporting your glasses, Michael Popoc, people, I think, are coming around to realizing that the wheels of justice are turning in the right direction. And we've been talking about other federal rulings and other outcomes that have reflected that. But I think nothing reflects it quite so much as this recent ruling by Judge Donald Middlebrooks in the Southern District of Florida. For all those out there who are new to Legal AF, one, what are you doing? But number two, Popoc practices in Florida, so he has some local expertise well about the federal bench and the judiciary there. But this was a lawsuit that was filed by Donald Trump and his lawyer who filed it on his behalf, Alina Haba, who I've said is probably the worst lawyer in the entire country because she thinks she's good, which adds an extra layer of problematic nature to it as she digs the hole deeper and deeper. But this was, I suppose, it was framed as a RICO lawsuit, a racketeering style conspiracy, but it was basically the rantings and ravings of a lunatic of 189 pages of Donald Trump just complaining how people like Hillary Clinton and Comey and others hurt his reputation by linking him to Russia, and that was somehow an actionable claim that should go before our court systems and the federal court systems. Not only was there no claim actually being asserted, and as Judge Middlebrook said when he dismissed this federal lawsuit back in September, every single allegation was basically false. I mean, from the basic facts that they would say, this person lived in New York, but like the person lived in Virginia. This person chaired the DNC, like the person never even worked at the DNC. So like all of the claims were frivolous, and basically all of the allegations were false. There was a previous sanction order by someone by the name of Charles Dolan, who got about $66,000 in sanctions a few months back, which we said just you wait. That $66,000 sanction motion is just the tip of the iceberg, because Hillary Clinton and about 18 others who got the case dismissed filed this sanctions motion seeking a little more than $1 million. And you and I said, based on Judge Middlebrook's analysis of the previous sanctions order, where he said everything is frivolous, we said, I expect it's going to be close to the $1 million. You know, the judge may shave off a few thousand dollars here or there if he thinks the billing was unreasonable. And Popak, I think you and I almost nailed it almost to the dollar. I mean, it was slightly less than $1 million. But for all intents and purposes, it's a $1 million sanctions order when you add up this one and the Dolan sanctions order. And it's an incredibly scathing order, where the judge not only attacks Trump's frivolous filing here, but attacks all of the other frivolous lawsuits that Donald Trump had filed, including the one that also happened to be assigned to the same judge, Middlebrooks, in the Letitia James lawsuit. But Popak, can you break down this order? Because rarely do you see an order so scathing, and lots of the legal AFers have said, how do you stop these vexatious litigants? Like, how do you stop the conduct? Well, the fact that Donald Trump was the one who filed the lawsuit seeking money against others, and he had to pay $1 million to the people he sued, is one way you stop vexatious litigants. Popak, break it down for us.
Yeah, I will. Thank you. As people know, I practice really in two places, New York, where I'm sitting now, and in Miami, where I spent 20 years. And I've been before Judge Middlebrooks and tried cases in front of him. And when he got originally assigned, go back to the prior videos of ours, you and I, and with my guidance, the audience, were very encouraged by the fact that Don Middlebrooks had been assigned the case, all these cases. And so everything that flowed from having a really good jurist, who's no nonsense, who's not MAGA, who's been on the bench for over 20 years. I think I tried my first case in front of him 25 years ago when he first got on, as being, he did what you and I did. He was a commercial litigator in a very well-known firm in West Palm Beach, and then got elevated and sits in West Palm Beach in the Southern District of Florida. And everything that we predicted has come true, from the dismissal of the case against Letitia James, the New York Attorney General, that got signed to Tom Middlebrooks, which got dismissed the same morning as his order came out. What I love about Don Middlebrooks, Judge Middlebrooks' decision in 46 pages, is that he doesn't hold back. He went in with a blueprint. I'm sure he told his clerks. And Don Middlebrooks is known for writing. He's a very good writer. So I wouldn't be surprised if he did the first or second draft of this order. And he had a couple of goals that he wanted to accomplish in the order. One, he wanted to lay out how, as a vexatious litigant, filing meritless cases all around the country, a lot with Alina Hava, he wanted all that in black and white. For both this order, for the exercise of inherent authority, which is the authority, this overarching authority of a federal judge or even a state judge to issue sanctions based on their inherent authority to make sure that the... of justice are greased properly and move in the right direction, and that people aren't obstructed. Justice. That's where the inherent authority comes from. And it also comes from a finding of bad faith. That's what Middlebrooks said triggers my inherent authority. Because he looked at the other places that he has authority to sanction people, Rule 11, we talked about that a lot on Legal AF, which really is backward-looking, as Judge Middlebrook says. It's the stuff you did in the past that you refuse to withdraw after somebody brought it to your attention, that it's without merit. And he said, this, you know, the Defense of Trade Secrets Act and other things, there's ways for me to order sanctions, but the best way, a most robust way for me as a federal judge to punish Donald Trump and his lawyer, Alina Habba, is exercising my inherent authority. And that then just opened the door to him saying, let's talk about all the places in America where Donald Trump, usually with Alina Habba at his side, that he has brought meritless, bad faith litigation to obstruct justice. And he then listed them, including the case, as you said, Ben, that was in front of him. He said, well, there's the Trump versus the... Attorney General case that's in front of me that I've said is meritless, and then Trump got the hit and dismissed it that morning. There's the case he filed in the Northern District of New York against Letitia James, which he also failed there. There's Trump versus Twitter. There's Trump versus CNN. There's Trump versus the Pulitzer Prize Board filed in Okeechobee, this little town in sugarcane country in the middle of the state, right by Lake Okeechobee, which the judge commented in his order, has no connection whatsoever to the Pulitzer Prize Board or to Donald Trump. In other words, he just threw a dart to get as far away. He didn't say this, but the implication was Donald Trump wanted to get as far away from Don Middlebrooks as a judge as possible. So he went up to Okeechobee and filed in state court. He didn't get out of the ire of the judge because the judge went and tracked down all these cases and listed them. He also said, basically, I also watch television. And the way the Judge Middlebrooks communicated that is because he cited all the times that Alina Habba went on Tucker Carlson or Hannity or Newsmax or any of them and commented negatively and attacked Middlebrooks, this judge, any judge. And he had a very great quote that we've talked about in the past where he said that Alina Habba went on, I think it was Tucker Carlson, and said that Donald Trump, after we got assigned this left-wing Clinton-appointed Judge Middlebrooks, and he wouldn't recuse himself, it was a losing battle, and Donald Trump told me to get out of the case. But the way that Middlebrooks highlighted that in the order is, you knew this case didn't have any merit, and all you had was attacking me on network television, on worldwide television. So if they thought that he doesn't watch television, he wasn't going to mention that in his order, he did. If he thought he wasn't going to mention all the other vexatious litigant places and obstruction of justice Donald Trump has done, and what... Thank you. Snow Bros. He said, I'm not saying... you, per se, for the Pulitzer board suit, the Twitter suit, the CNN suit, or all these other suits, but I have inherent authority, and I can look beyond what's in this courtroom to see how you operate in the real world outside of Southern District of Florida. And what he came away with is the menu or the cookbook for Donald Trump, which he listed towards the end of his order. Middlebrook said there's basically six steps to Donald Trump. One, use provocative rhetoric in your filing. Two, use a political narrative that you get from your rallies. Three, attack opponents in the news media. Four, disregard legal precedent. Ignore case law when you file and case law that's against you. Five, fundraising. Use all of these techniques to raise money. And he cited and quoted to links to Donald Trump using the case with Middlebrooks and the case in the Pulitzer Prize Board and all these other places to raise huge sums of money. And six, attack the judge. And this is the owner's manual for Donald Trump in lawsuits. And I love the fact that forevermore, and this will be cited not just in Florida, but in every case around the country, because Middlebrooks is very well respected in the federal judiciary, it is now in 48 or 47 pages, the playbook, the emperor has no clothes. This is what he does. And then finally, Ben, I love the fact that he made the $1 million, or close to it. He shaved off about 15% of the amount that the attorneys were asking for, based on a little bit on hourly rate that they were charging, but not much. He thought the hourly rate was fine. A little bit on the way some things were billed, I won't get into the minutia, on billing records. But overall, he awarded them, you know, everything that they were looking for, and made it what we call in the business joint and several liability, meaning... True. Both Alina Haba and Donald Trump are responsible to get that $1 million paid. So I guess the good news for Alina Haba, if there's any good news, is she can allow her client to pay the $1 million so she doesn't have to pay it. He didn't say Alina Haba, a law firm, has to pay $500,000 and Donald Trump has to pay $500,000. He probably figures Alina doesn't have it anyway. So it's jointly and severally liable. So I assume Donald Trump's going to pay the million. That's going to let them out from under this. If they don't pay the million, and they're going to pay the million, but if they don't pay the $1 million, then they're in contempt, in criminal contempt of court, and then people could start going to jail.
It's going to be interesting there, though, is Alina Haba is going to have that conversation with Donald Trump, if she hasn't had it already, as to who is going to pay, you know, and... one of the things that the court did in making that joint and several liability, making them both responsible, kind of both throwing shade and also kind of pitting them against each other a little bit, footnote 38 on page 46, the court writes, "Sanctions must never be hollow gestures, their bite must be real. But for the bite to be real, it must be an amount a person can pay. I believe the monetary sanctions imposed here are well within plaintiff and plaintiff's lawyer's ability to pay, and therefore I have not thought it necessary to conduct an intrusive inquiry into their finances. However, should plaintiff or plaintiff's lawyer and law firm believe that the amount would seriously jeopardize their financial status, that individual or firm should file within 10 days of this order, under seal, a verified statement of net worth, which includes assets and liabilities. In the event of such filing, the obligation of that individual or law firm will be told until further order of the court." And so saying, well, you say you're rich, so you should be fine, but if you're not as rich as you say you are, you could come and you could submit an affidavit to me.
We'll never see that affidavit. That will never be filed.
You know, one of the other powerful parts of this order, I thought, was on page 6, where the court goes, "Here we are confronted with a lawsuit that should never have been filed, which was completely frivolous, both factually and legally, and which was brought in bad faith for an improper purpose. Mr. Trump is a prolific and sophisticated litigant who is repeatedly using the courts to seek revenge on political adversaries. He is the mastermind of strategic abuse of the judicial process, and he cannot be seen as a litigant blindly following the advice of a lawyer. He knew full well with the impact of his actions. He knew full well the impact of his actions. As such, I find that sanctions should be imposed upon Mr. Trump and his lead counsel." Language like that is going to be cited by people who Donald Trump sue across the country right now as ways to get sanctions in their case and to stop his vexatious litigation. So not only here did Judge Middlebrooks make an incredibly important order for this case, but for any future person who's sued by Trump or the Trump organization, they're going to cite this as precedent or just as its persuasive value to basically say, look, this is what federal judges are saying. And those bricks are being built. You know, for example, in the Letitia James case, one of the things that Middlebrooks cited before issuing the sanctions order when he denied a frivolous injunctive relief request by Donald Trump in his ridiculous lawsuit that he filed against New York Attorney General Letitia James in connection with the fact that she brought a fraud lawsuit in New York State Court against him seeking at least $250 million, the court said, look, the Trump organization's a felon. They were just convicted on 17 felony counts. I am not going to hurt the people of the state of New York by granting any injunctive relief to a felon organization. So brick by brick, those things are being built. And as I mentioned, the New York Attorney General Letitia James, her fraud lawsuit against Donald Trump. So Donald Trump filed in Florida, in Palm Beach County. He filed a lawsuit against Letitia James after she sued him under the New York Attorney General statute, ostensibly to try to stop her from getting discovery in her case that she's entitled to have, which is before a New York State judge, Judge Arthur Engron. And there, you know, there's basically no jurisdiction at all for Donald Trump to bring this case against the New York Attorney General. There's no jurisdiction. There's no claim that he's being asserted. It just so happened to get assigned to the same judge, Judge Middlebrooks, and New York Attorney General Letitia James filed a motion to dismiss that case. And in the denial of the preliminary injunctive order, Judge Middlebrooks pointed out in a footnote on like the last page of his order, this is a frivolous case. You should dismiss it. This was, about a month or so ago. Donald Trump did not dismiss it then. He still kept the lawsuit going. But as soon as Judge Middlebrooks issued this order sanctioning him $1 million and citing New York Attorney General Letitia James case in this recent sanctions order, what Trump do? He backs down. I want to get your take on that, Popak, because that is a pattern that we see of Donald Trump. You know, you remember leading up to the insurrection when Donald Trump wanted to appoint Jeff Clark as the head of the attorney, as the attorney general. What happened? All the United States attorneys, they said, we're all going to resign.
Right.
Donald Trump was running around his playbook.
It's fucking 3 months ago. How about some more Midas Touch? Smith Wars. Did I finish this?
Also, it takes only about 2 minutes to set up a frame using the Aura app. Super easy. Right now, Aura.
Justin, fierce debate on McCarthy's debt limit bill and House Rules Committee. They don't know how to fucking do their job. Gonna write a note.
We are here to consider.
they know how to do is sabotage this country and to grandstand and try to get their cult leader exempted from facing call the DOJ and demand they are charged with insurrection, removed from office, and disqualified under the 14th Amendment now.
H.R. 2811, okay, the Limit, Save, and Grow Act of
fuck them in jail.
And H.J. Resolution 39, disapproving the rules.
4 hours ago, breaking Court of Appeals delivers crushing blow to Donald Trump.
I'm Ben Mycelis from the Connell Trump Network. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals just handed another big loss to Donald Trump. Donald Trump appealed the lower federal court ruling, which would have compelled former Vice President Mike Pence to testify on mostly all of the things that he saw and observed leading to and after the January 6th insurrection. The federal court judge, Jeb Boasberg, carved out a small portion where he ruled in favor of former Vice President Pence's request for limited speech and debate clause immunity. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but generally allowed the Department of Justice to subpoena former Vice President Mike Pence in connection with Special Counsel Jack Smith's ongoing criminal investigation into Donald Trump's 2020 election interference. And former Vice President Mike Pence said, you know what? I am not appealing this ruling based on the arguments that I made, and I will testify before the grand jury in Washington, D.C., investigating Donald Trump for crimes. However, Donald Trump filed an appeal to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which just issued a ruling, and Donald Trump filed an appeal on different grounds. And I'll talk about the technicalities here, but let's get to the point right away. And this is the ruling denying Donald Trump's appeal, which Donald Trump tried to block former Vice President Mike Pence from testifying. And grand jury proceedings are under seal, so we don't actually get to see a full ruling, but we do see the docket sheet where the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals denied Donald Trump's appeal. And the denial was done on a per curiam basis, or a unanimous ruling. So all three judges on the panel, there was one Trump appointee and two Obama appointees, all three agreed to reject Donald Trump's appeal trying to block Pence from testifying before the grand jury. Here's the order right here. It says sealed, redacted, per curiam order, and per curiam basically means all of the court is in agreement, and it's sealed, meaning it's confidential, and it's not, the order is not released publicly. It says the filed, the emergency motion is denied before judges Millet, Witkins, and Katsas, Millet and Witkins, Obama appointees, Katsas, a Trump appointee, but the filed emergency motion, that's the emergency motion filed by Donald Trump, was denied, is denied. So what is the result of this? Absolutely, former Vice President Mike Pence will be testifying before the grand jury in Washington, D.C. very soon, before Special Counsel Jack Smith and Jack Smith's team that is criminally investigating Donald Trump. So I'm sure we will see a post by Donald Trump on his social media platform soon, whining and complaining about this ruling. But let's be clear, a Trump appointee also agreed with the two Obama appointees. This was a...
We are here to
Big win for Jack.
I'm Ben Mycelis from the Midas Touch Network. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals just handed another big loss to Donald Trump. Donald Trump appealed the lower federal court ruling, which would have compelled former Vice President Mike Pence to testify on mostly all of the things that he saw and observed leading to and after the January 6th insurrection. The federal court judge, Jeb Boasberg, carved out a small portion where he ruled in favor of former Vice President Pence's request for limited speech and debate clause immunity. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but generally allowed the Department of Justice to subpoena former Vice President Mike Pence in connection with Special Counsel Jack Smith's ongoing criminal investigation into Donald Trump's 2020 election interference. And former Vice President Mike Pence said, you know what, I am not appealing this ruling based on the arguments that I made, and I will testify before the grand jury in Washington, D.C., investigating Donald Trump for crimes. However, Donald Trump filed an appeal to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which just issued a ruling, and Donald Trump filed an appeal on different grounds. And I'll talk about the technicalities here, but let's get to the point right away. And this is the ruling denying Donald Trump's appeal, which Donald Trump tried to block former Vice President Mike Pence from testifying. And grand jury proceedings are under seal, so we don't actually get to see a full ruling, but we do see the docket sheet where the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals denied Donald Trump's appeal. And the denial was done on a per curiam basis, or a unanimous ruling. So all three judges on the panel, there was one Trump appointee and two Obama appointees, all three agreed to reject Donald Trump's appeal trying to block Pence from testifying before the grand jury. Here's the order right here. It says sealed, redacted, per curiam order. And per curiam basically means all of the court is in agreement. And it's sealed, meaning it's confidential and it's not, the order is not released publicly. It says the filed, the emergency motion is denied before judges Millet, Witkins, and Katsas. Millet and Witkins, Obama appointees, Katsas, a Trump appointee. But the filed emergency motion, that's the emergency motion filed by Donald Trump, was denied, is denied. So what is the result of this? Absolutely, former Vice President Mike Pence will be testifying before the grand jury in Washington, D.C., very soon, before Special Counsel Jack Smith and Jack Smith's team that is criminally investigating Donald Trump. So I'm sure we will see a post by Donald Trump on his social media platform soon, whining and complaining about this ruling. But let's be clear, a Trump appointee also agreed with the two Obama appointees. This was a unanimous decision that Donald Trump lost. So just to refresh your recollection, when a subpoena was issued to former Vice President Mike Pence, initially, both Mike Pence and Donald Trump filed different motions to try to block Special Counsel Jack Smith from getting testimony from former Vice President Mike Pence. Mike Pence made the argument that under the speech and debate clause in the United States Constitution, because even though he was the vice president, he argued he was serving on January 6th as the president of the Senate in his ceremonial role. The vice president also serves as the president of the Senate, does the tiebreaker where there's a tiebreaker needed in the Senate, and also has the ceremonial role, for example, of counting the electoral votes on January 6th. So Pence said, I should be entitled to the same immunity that members of the House of Representatives and senators get under what's called the Speech and Debate Clause of the United States Constitution. And that has been interpreted through a variety of cases before the Supreme Court,
The most notable one is United States versus Gravel, a case from the 1970s that basically said for all legitimate legislative activities by members of the House of Representatives and Senators, as well as their staff and legitimate legislative activities on the House floor or even outside of the House of Representatives, they have immunity from testifying, and they also have immunity from being sued on those issues. And things that are outside of legitimate legislative activity include things like engaging in criminal conduct or exhorting or extorting or putting undue pressure on people to do things. Also, statements made to the press are outside the scope of legitimate legislative activities. And so Penn said, all of my conduct should be protected under the speech and debate clause. Special counsel Jack Smith said, none of your conduct should be under the speech and debate clause. And ultimately, the presiding federal judge there, Judge Jeb Boasberg, basically said, look, Pence, for the small amount of time where you were counting the electoral votes on January 6th, when you were in that ceremonial role as president of the Senate, then you have immunity. You don't have to testify about what took place then. But all of the communications and conduct leading up to the January 6th insurrection that you viewed and observed, that is outside of legitimate legislative activity, and or you're not even covered by the speech or debate clause in the first place. So Pence basically said, well, that's kind of a win for me. It really wasn't, because Pence said, I don't have to testify about these things that took place on January 6th. But the reality is that special counsel Jack Smith's investigation, it's not really focused on what happened while Pence was counting the electoral votes itself. That was on C-SPAN. That was on TV. We all saw what happened. So special counsel Jack Smith, though, is going to get to the heart of the matter and get all of this knowledge, all of this observation of former Vice President Pence leading up to January 6th and after, about all of the conduct that Donald Trump engaged